Good afternoon, Mark. How you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, of course, anytime, anytime. I just watched the film this morning as soon as I woke up.
Well, I hope it didn't ruin your day.
I've been covering independent horror for 20 years, so it's nothing that can really surprise me, no matter what the quality is of something. It's not like I can go, oh my God, this is the worst thing I've ever seen, because I've always seen worse.
I like your room.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's this is the smallest room in our house, and so we're like, we can't even fit a bed in here. So I was like, screw it, I'm just gonna
Make an
it used to be
offer.
my it used to be my photo studio before COVID hit, and then all of a sudden we couldn't book any clients, so we're like, oh well, it's just going to become one of those typical gamer jerk ass setups. So, I'm guessing that Cocaine Shark was not the original title of this movie,
No, the original title of the movie was Narco Shark, and it was,
which is better, by the way.
yes, and it was made a year ago, a little slightly over a year ago, and well before Cocaine Bear was even in the public consciousness. And I tell this story, a friend of mine sent me the poster for Cocaine Shark and said, "Is this your movie?" And I looked at it and went, "Nah, that's not my movie." And he said, "You better take a closer look at the type at the bottom." And I looked and I'm like, "Yeah, that's our movie." I didn't know it had gotten retitled, so it was a pleasant surprise.
Isn't that usually part of the distribution deal with these places that they usually tell you they're going to retitle it to make it marketable?
I think they meant to, but they're probably going to tell me the day they released the title change. Or maybe they did and I forgot. I don't remember, but distributors are allowed to change the titles of movies. In fact, in the history of motion pictures, numerous movies get reissued under different titles, and you can't do it as much anymore, but they used to do it all the time. Play a movie at the theater and it's on TV at the same time with a different title. And
I think that's the case for most things I see that come out from or that are advertised by October Coast. They always were either made a year ago and they're going under some kind of change like that. So I wasn't that surprised. But when I saw it, I was like, this looks like a fun B movie, but I have a feeling that it's not supposed to have anything to do with cocaine.
It does actually.
Well,
It,
there are the drugs. There is
yeah.
that, but it's not trying to do something. You're not trying to rip off Cocaine Bear. You made
No.
your own original thing.
Yeah.
It's just strictly for marketing.
Yes. Yeah. It's the movie has cocaine in it and it has a shark. And there's a lot in between.
It has two types of sharks. You have your crab shark hybrid, then you have your, I don't want to
Man
spoil it
shark.
for anybody that
Yeah.
watches it. Yeah, the
There's a
man
man
shark.
shark. Yeah,
Yeah.
I think there's a bunch of weird creatures in it.
I was sad to not see the hybrid monkey bat spider thing more than just that one shot.
Yeah, that's kind of our ode to Piranha, where you see that thing at the in the lab, and it kind of runs around real quick, and you never see it again. Although, apparently they shot an ending for Piranha where that creature comes up out of the water at the very end of the movie. Roger Corman hates stop motion
Yeah.
because it takes time, and he thinks it's a waste of money, I guess. So he made them cut it out, which I thought would have been a great ending to the movie, but
It would have made, I think he did Chronosaur too, right?
Carnosaur,
Carnosaur, yeah, because
that
that had
was all puppets
all puppet, yeah. It
and
would
a
have been
really.
better with a stop motion
None of them
dinosaur.
look. None of them looked alike. Is this the same dinosaur? What's going on here?
Why did you make the movie? I guess that's the biggest question. Why did you make something like this?
The distributor reached out to me and said, "Yeah, I've got a title here. I got an idea for a project. Are you interested? Here's the title." And he told me what it was, and I'm like, "Yeah, maybe we could do something. It sounded kind of fun." So I worked out a plot. Sent him a synopsis, like a two-page synopsis, and he liked it. So then I wrote the script, and that's how it came about. It's sort of like the good old days where you had like American International, and they call up Roger Corman and say, "Hey, we got this poster. You make a movie about it." It's sort of the same thing. but yeah, the poster comes later, and obviously the title gets changed, but it's sort of an on-demand kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting way of putting it. I don't think I've ever heard that before. They, at least in independent film, because usually independent film is you have an idea that you really want to get made, you have to convince distribution, but here's the other way around, which is an interesting scenario. I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, it's kind of nice because you know, I make a couple movies a year for Wild Eye, mm-hmm. and they're based on the ideas that they have. So it's kind of a challenge. I've never turned anything down because I thought all the ideas were cool, and it's fun to do that. It's fun to be part of that process. You can say, a company hired me to make this movie versus you're paying for everything out of your pocket. Mm-hmm. You hope you find distribution and you hope you get paid, that kind of deal. So, and I do projects of my own. So I'm kind of all over the place with my own projects, collaborating with people and then producing product for specific distributors. So.
Yeah, I heard your name come up in a Red Letter Media episode I watched a few days ago. not directly referring to any of your movies, but it was a play on a name of a building or a name of a facility that sounded like Polonia. So they just kept referring it to the Polonia building. But the movie in question was real shit. So it's not like it was kind of like. Polonia Brothers movies aren't like this. They're not like, they actually have soul to them. You can tell it's a filmmaker trying to make a film, not someone like, I have an empty room, let's just shoot something in it for the hell of it. Yeah, there's a difference between churning out a movie just for the hell of it and actually enjoying filmmaking, which you seem to do.
Yeah,
there's no question that is a movie it's a movie regardless of quality. it's good on several levels.
Well, and some people just aren't baptized into the micro budget world, which is mm-hmm. a movie that's, $10,000 or less. Mm-hmm. That's not a lot of money to make a film. So you do the best you can. And yeah, sure, sometimes things are a little rough around the edges, but the bottom line is are you entertained?
Mm-hmm.
And I think most people who get what we do and are fans are entertained. I think the occasional bystander that watches something might be gobsmacked by what they see because they're used to the Avengers, they're used to Star Wars, they're used to all this $100 million stuff, and they legitimately may not be aware of this lower micro budget film movement that exists out there. Not just me, but there's a lot of people that mm-hmm. do it. So it can be a daunting experience for the uninitiated, but I think once people grasp what you're doing and you're right, I don't do any movie I don't want to because it's not worth it. I have to believe in it and want to do it to make it, because filmmaking is a lot of work. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun, but it's more work on our level because there's so few people doing it. We can't snap our fingers and there's 20 people ready to help you out with something. It's a mm-hmm. whole different situation. So if you're not into what you're doing, if you're not, if your passion for what you're doing isn't there, it's going to show in the end result. There's no denying it.
I think the audience for these films has depreciated a bit simply because we no longer have video rental stores. We no longer have the people that go in there and they're looking for something that's oddball. Mm-hmm. Now everyone is just like, if they see the big budget thing on Apple TV or on Hulu or whatever, they're going to immediately go to that because they know that, and they're not going to look at a DVD box and look at the back of it and go, wow, this looks really something. Let's just rent it and see. Now they're just going to bypass it because they can get that instant gratification of whatever they had. They're not
right.
They're not going into Blockbuster and be like, oh, I can't rent The Dark Knight or whatever. I have to grab something else. It just happens to be, a low budget movie that they don't think about. Unfortunately, that's just gone.
Yeah. The thing is, and you hit the nail on the head. It's a double-edged sword. The fact is there's so much out there for you to access now, but the options are almost overwhelming. So it's mm-hmm. easy for smaller product to slip through the cracks because there's no public awareness. There's no $50 million advertising campaign, and no one's going to see Cocaine Shark on a Happy Meal at McDonald's. So, you're sort of out of luck there, but these things find an audience, believe it or not. I've run mm-hmm. into so many people who in a million years I never would have thought recognize me or what I do. You just don't know who sees this stuff. Mm-hmm. And you're right. It's in the video days, you had limited choices, so you took risks. Today, you have so much out there, you're not going to bother. You're going to go mm-hmm. directly for what you want, and everything else gets pushed aside.
Do you think that the future of micro-budget filmmaking may solely rely on video on demand, like YouTube or like these avenues, instead of going through distribution anymore?
It depends on how long traditional distribution lasts. To be honest, there aren't that many companies out there that are selling physical product anymore. Mm-hmm. You have these boutique labels, but they're releasing older movies and spending a fortune buying the rights and then producing special features. So the day that traditional distribution disappears, which probably could be right around the corner, filmmakers like me are going to have to accept the fact that we either start our own streaming channel and have our own exclusive product, or you just sort of find a place that'll take your stuff and get it out there. But again, with streaming, none of these companies are going to put any effort into promoting what you do. A distributor will, because it's in their best interest. But on streaming, it's like a giant flea market, It's just out there and people can find it if they want it. So it's going to be harder, I think, for independents like us. That's why I always tell young filmmakers is that, if you're going to do this for the long haul, you sort of need to develop your own brand, because that makes what you do recognizable. Like, New World Pictures, Full Moon Entertainment,
Canon.
All those companies had a brand and you knew what you were getting, and that takes time. So you have to be willing to put the time into it. So when people see Polonia Brothers Entertainment, they can say, oh, we're going to have a fun time watching a low budget movie, or that's a piece of crap. Forget it. Let's move on. Either way, It's identifiable. And I think that's going to help people like me and up and coming filmmakers stay in the game, because it gets harder every year. It really does.
One of the things I'm worried about is something I've seen happen recently is Lloyd Kaufman and Troma are eating up a lot of smaller creators' back catalogs of movies. I'm glad it happened for my friend Kevin Strange. His whole Hack Movies thing got bought up by them. That's great. But is that going to be the only game in town anymore? Is everything's going to have a Troma stamp on it? Which, it could be good if you're a fan of old Troma stuff, but if you're nowadays, that doesn't mean anything to really anybody. No. Troma doesn't have the pull it had in the 80s and 90s. Everyone's going to look at it and go, what the hell is this?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I fear for a lot of horror filmmakers that are straddling that indie, really low level budget area.
Yeah. And it's tempting for a filmmaker to say, hey, let's let a company like Troma take our film, thinking they're going to put every ounce of effort they have to release it, but they're just basically creating a library of titles that then they can unleash on the digital world mm-hmm. and make money off of. Because at that point, it's quantity.
Yep.
That's really what streaming is about. It's about quantity. A lot of these streaming places, they don't want a company that has one movie. They want a lot. If you have 30 movies, no, we don't want to deal with you then.
Yep.
And Troma was smart, I think, in seeing that, but it hurts the filmmaker, because I'm sure there's movies Troma's acquired that never saw the light of day, literally never got released. And that's not, good for the filmmaker.
Yeah. Like a lot of the films, like with the distribution company that currently has your film, there were a lot of movies that were sitting on the shelves for years. Mm-hmm. That only just now got released. One of them had Jack Champion from the second Avatar movie in it. I interviewed him when the movie hit DVD, but it had been 3 years, and he was already shooting Avatar by the time. I was like, I don't remember anything about that film. That was years ago. I can't tell you anything. It's probably the worst interview I ever did.
Really, he didn't know anything about it.
He couldn't remember it because it was so long ago, and he was currently in the mess of production. That's a James Cameron film. You're throwing yourself full on into that, and you're not going to remember this low budget haunted house movie you did.
who was the filmmaker?
I can't remember who the director was. I cannot tell you. I can't even, I
He was in one of our movies?
No, it wasn't one of yours.
No, okay. I was going to say, we've never had anyone in our movies in an Avatar.
I honestly can't remember. I'd have to look it up. Let's see. Jack Champion.
Interview. I've heard of the name, yeah.
Yep.
Well, a lot of these guys do movies and not, you know, men and women, and then, you know, later regret it or they're embarrassed about it, which is sad, you know? It's like, why would any of the actors in the original Friday the 13th be ashamed to admit they were in that? You can't deny you can't deny you were in it. You know,
embrace. Now you're part of a legendary franchise.
Embrace it. But a lot of these big movie stars, they'll just like deny they were in it, or they don't want to talk about it. I saw an interview with Michael Douglas once, and he was on this show, and this guy was obviously trying to embarrass him. And he said, well, let's look at this movie you were in a long time ago. And it was, you know, he was just a kid almost. And, you know, it was a low budget crime thing. You know, mm-hmm. He probably didn't even remember being in it. But when it was over, the guy's like, well, what do you think about that now that you're a big star? And Michael Douglas, you know, God bless him, he said, you know what? I'm not embarrassed I made that movie. Those people gave me an opportunity I wouldn't have otherwise. And the guy that was interviewing him didn't know what to say. He was like waiting for him to do, you know, oh yeah, well, I did that because I needed rent money and stuff like that. But, you know, you it's just a lesson that, you know, no matter what level you attain in the entertainment industry, you should never be ashamed of where you started, because quite frankly, you could be right back there someday.
Mm-hmm. You wouldn't be part of this industry if you didn't love it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and big actors, you know, their careers spiral just like anyone else, and they're in all kinds of low budget stuff. So they, you know, you shouldn't knock anything, because, you know, just because you're on the way up doesn't mean you won't meet all these people on the way back down again. Mm-hmm. So I'm proud of everything I've made, despite what people think about it, because everything I made led me to here, led mm-hmm. us to this conversation. We wouldn't be having this conversation if it wasn't for Cocaine Shark.
Usually, I haven't done that many interviews recently since I started working for Clownfish, because it's mainly writing now and not doing interviews, which I'd done for such a long time. But when I saw the name and I saw the trailer, and I was like, I've got to talk to this guy.
Yeah, is he in an insane asylum?
It's like, why would you choose to do this? Why would you put yourself through this? But it's because you love making films, and you have this. You have the opportunity that's actually handed to you, which is so incredibly rare.
Yeah.
That someone says, do you want to make this movie, instead of you convincing someone that you want to make a movie?
Right. It's, you know, over the course of my career, it's sort of turned, which is nice. And I, you know, I've done, you know, I've been doing this for 37 years. And so, you know, I've done a lot of post-production for film companies. So I've done a lot of different stuff, and, you know, not only do I make films and do side work and shoot industrials and special features for movies, you know, I have a day job just like any other person.
Mm-hmm.
And but luckily it fits into my field, what I like to do. So I'm never not doing any of this stuff unless I'm unconscious. That's the only time I'm not. But yeah, I'm a very fortunate person, I have to admit. You know, the films I make are an acquired taste. I realize that. But you know, when you get to do something you love, it doesn't matter. I never got into this to be rich, and I never got into this to be famous. I do what I do because I love what I do. And that's what's taken me through 37 years of certainly ups and downs,
mm-hmm.
Successes and not so near successes. And, you know, it's not about money. If that's why people want to get into this business, 99% of them are in for a really hard ride.
At least if you ever experience a downturn, you don't have to resort to doing things like appearing on MILF Manor, like poor Lisa Wilcox had to.
Yeah, I don't think I'd be on that. I don't think they'd invite me into that club.
But you're never going to have to whore yourself in a way that is demeaning to your overall profession or yourself. You can just say, I just don't want to make films anymore.
Yeah. I mean, and it, you know, it really boils down to what's your perception of success? You know, success is not making tons of money and having 8 beautiful women hanging on you and 7 cars and boats. That's an after effect of it. Success means a lot of different things to different people. You know, someone who can't read, who learns how to read, that's success. Someone mm-hmm. who is told they're never going to walk again and does, that's success. So it's all relative, and you really have to, when you do this stuff and you're in this business, you've got to keep a straight head, because, you know, yeah, I mean, there's people that look at me and go, yeah, well, he's successful. But, you know, I look at myself and then look at Steven Spielberg and go, well, maybe I'm not that successful. It's relative, but you know, it's how you look at it. And you got to find your place. You know, mm-hmm. once you realize where you're going to be, you just run with it and have fun. You know, I love making micro budget movies. It's challenging. You're always thinking on your feet. You can't throw money at problems. You really have to get in there with all the sweat and blood and get stuff done. Not to say if someone said, hey, Lucasfilm's on the line, they want you to direct a new Star Wars movie, I'd probably do it once so I could take all that money and make 1,000 micro budget movies.
Take a percentage of like the merchandising sales and you're set for life. You can make as many movies as you'd like to.
That call hasn't come in yet. I check my messages every day.
But you keep trying.
If it doesn't, it doesn't matter. You know, if it doesn't matter to me, if it never happens, it never happens. I'm very happy with what I've accomplished. I'm looking forward to what the future brings, and that's good enough for me. I mean, I've done what I've set out to do when I was a little kid. You know, you turn a dream into a reality into a profession. And sooner or later, when it's your time to leave this world, you've left a legacy behind. That's, what more can you ask for?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not like you're going to be unknown. I mean, because the movies you make stand out, regardless of what people's opinions are of them. They are there. They're not like some things you see like The Asylum makes that are instantly forgettable. You can have a movie that's just off the wall. Some might consider it bad, but it sticks in people's heads. Like Snakes on a Train, I thought was a terrible movie. Or Snakes on a Plane. Well, Snakes on a Train too. That was an Asylum movie. But Snakes on a Plane, it was a ridiculous, it wasn't that great, but man, that was on everybody's mind that whole summer that came out.
Yeah, it's like the old, I tell young filmmakers and people that are interested in what you do, and they're like, well, does that bother you that you're like not famous and you don't make $1 million movies? And I'm like, no, I said, and I use this analogy, you know, Ed Wood was notorious for being a terrible filmmaker, which isn't true. I think the guy had talent. He did. He made movies.
He just had zero budget.
Yeah. And at a time when it was hard to do that. If he was alive today, he'd probably have his own channel. But here's a guy who toiled his whole life, basically got crap from everybody, thought of himself as an, you know, total failure. And then he dies. And, you know, and then someone makes a $40 million movie about him. You know, Ed Wood won. He didn't live to see it, but the guy won, because if you said to the average person, hey, who's Ed Wood? Most people would go, oh, yeah, he made Plan 9 from Outer Space. But if you said, hey, who directed Rollerball? I don't know. I have to look it up. You know, so Ed Wood won. It just took him time.
Mm-hmm.
And time, when you're an artistic person and your stuff is out there, it lives longer than you do, and you can't, it's hard for you to assess where you're at when you're in it. That's for other people to do when you're gone. And so I encourage filmmakers to keep their focus on where they're at. Don't look at the big picture right now. Look at where you're at. What do you want to accomplish, and work on that? Invest in yourself, you know, don't invest in the stock market, invest in yourself, because you're in control of what you're doing. And that's the best investment you can make.
You actually beat me to the last question I usually ask most of my guests, is what's your advice for up and coming filmmakers, but you already hit that. I think a lot of them look at short term gains, which is unfortunate. I think that's been exacerbated by YouTube, because they're looking for that instant, like, million followers, kind of like instant takeoff thing. It's just, those stories are so few and far between that you're going to have to take a beating to finally make it. No matter what, you're going to have to take bad reviews. You're going to have to take crap scripts and be the ire of a million YouTube reactionary channels before you get to where you need to be.
Everything else. You have to be prepared to deal with that.
I mean, you have to have very thick skin.
Well, yeah. If you're ever having a bad day, just Google my name and read the first 10 whatever, and you'll be like, man, I feel good. But, you know, the people are entitled to their opinion, and that's the way it is. They're not walking in your shoes. They're just objectively projecting whatever they are onto it, and that's fine. But I rarely read reviews, because it doesn't matter to me what people think.
And lashing out at people that give you a bad reviews, because I've been the target of that before with some reviews I've written long ago when I used to work at Dread Central. People would take it personally. And honestly, nothing I say in my reviews is personal. It's just an observation. So if I think something's crap, it's just because that's what my opinion is. I'm not purposely saying this director is a terrible person. Just saying that they just made a bad movie.
I have to make it
entertaining, because people have to read it. We need the clicks to pay the writers.
right. Yeah, you do. You said it. You have to have thick skin, because you're going to get a barrage of negativity, and you know, that's just how it is, especially in this day and age when you can anonymously berate people without you know, confronting them face to face, because 90% of the people that write that stuff, if they were right in front of you, wouldn't say it. They wouldn't say it, because they know they get clobbered, you know. But but yeah, it's people can think what they want, and it's fair that they can say those things, and that's their honest opinion, and you have to respect that. You don't have to agree with it, but you have to respect it.
Is there going to be a Cocaine Shark sequel? Because you did leave it off on a little bit of a lead on there.
Yeah, every movie we make, we kind of leave it open to sequel. Not that it would matter. You could make a sequel to anything, even if everyone in it blew up. Mm-hmm. You could bring the same people back and play the same characters. But I doubt it. You know, we'll see how well it does. But in this day and age, sequels are... you know, I've made a few in my career, not very many. We did a sequel to Splatter Farm, Return to Splatter Farm, which oddly enough was probably one of the best reviewed movies I ever made, which shocked the hell out of me. I thought that movie was going to get lambasted from the get-go. But it didn't. You know, I guess certain movies hit certain fans and there's a nostalgia. But I'm not really into sequels. Most of them aren't as good as the original. Occasionally you get some that are better, but
right.
Like Count Yorga, the Return of Count Yorga is a better movie than the first one. But that's my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to be creative, then retreading old ground or old characters, I mean, I could see that stifling your need to be creative. And when it comes to low budget films, I don't know if there's ever really a yearning for a sequel or creating some kind of extended universe or whatever the hell the new marketing thing is. It's just kind of like, if it's one and done, that's great. If you get a second one, okay. But right. I'd rather see a new idea every time from a filmmaker that I can instantly recognize their work.
Right. Yeah. Cause you know, in the micro budget world, you're lucky, you know, you've got enough material to make an 80-minute movie once, let alone go back and try it again. So I'm with you on that. It'd have to be something exceptional to make a sequel to.
Were there any challenges with making this movie in particular?
Yeah, I mean, any filmmaking endeavor is full of challenges, because you know, you can't control the weather.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to you know, be on location. Occasionally, we'll shoot in a studio, which is nice. But again, that restricts you in some regards. The toughest part of making the movie was being out on the water in a boat.
I figured that would be a pain in the ass.
real difficult because you can't control the current, can't control people going by in the background, you know, spending 20 minutes zooming around you in their jet skis. You know, they don't know what you're doing out there. And then you have people that stop and ask if you're okay. You know, I don't understand why seeing a giant shark head sticking out of the back of your boat would cause any concern whatsoever, but it apparently does. So yeah, there's all that. It's, you know, all the things you read about Jaws are true. Absolutely. And we had one boat, they had three or four. So I can't imagine the nightmare that they must have went through, because we were constantly, once you'd set up a shot and, you know, you want to get a wide and a reversal and whatnot, you got to make sure your background's consistent and you start to drift. So you got to move the boat around, and then, you know, then a bunch of skiers come through and you got to wait. And by the time they get out of sound range, your boat's drifted again and you got to move it around. And then, the, you know, the water patrol comes by and asks you if you're okay. And, you know, all this just goes on all day long, and you lose time, but it's just one of the challenges of working on water that you have to, you know, adapt to. Even if you anchor the boat, which we did, it still drifts around in a circle. So it's always challenging being on water, and then using props, big shark heads, you know, we had a prop and we had a fin, and, you know, then people have to fall into the water. There's safety that you got, you know, safety concerns. So it's a lot. It's a lot to manage. The nice thing is that no one can escape. Once you get them in the boat and out on the water, they're stuck. You don't have to worry about them wandering off or getting on their phone because they have no reception. You know, it's kind of nice in that regard, but everything else is taxing on you in a couple days that you're out there doing that.
Did you have some tempers flare during the water shoots?
We did once on Jurassic Shark 3, but not on Cocaine Shark. No, it was most of the time people were pretty pleasant, but it, you know, tempers can flare when you're out there in the sun and you're baking, and you know, your costume may not be indicative of being out on a boat all day, but you know, that's just what the costume was. So you know, we had a guy get upset and started, you know, just complaining about how hot it was, and I casually said, well, you're not in the frame, take your jacket off, you know. Sorry, I gotta think for you, but that'd probably be the best solution to this problem.
You can't babysit everybody.
no. So you know, you have those little things, but for the most part, and people love being out on a boat too. What we do is we take a break and eat lunch and just taxi around and let them cool off with the breeze. You know, of course that's eating into our budget because the cost of gas is pretty high for that kind of stuff, and rental, you know, the rental. But you know, you got to do what you have to do to make people happy, and it was kind of fun.
How'd you get your actors? Was it a casting call, or were these people that you knew and had worked with prior?
Most of them we had worked with prior. A couple were newbies that people recommended, and they came in to do the film. And you know, a lot of people stick around. Over the years, people have come and gone. They drift in and out because of life circumstances, or they're just tired of acting. And you know, that's a frustrating profession in itself. I mean, I can't imagine trying to be a working actor. But you know, yeah, mostly cast with people that you can rely on. You know, they can deliver. You're not going to waste time all day people stumbling over lines, and there's nothing worse than that. So yeah, we like to work with our sort of stock company that has been in a lot of our films. So and they're a lot of fun. They're talented people, and they're a lot of fun, and they always bring their A game and contribute an immense amount. It can't be understated, you know, what other people bring to a project, because you know, as the director and the producer, you get no credit and all the blame, but it really is a collaborative effort, and it's not just one person's vision. It's a lot of people, you know, myself and everyone involved, the cast, the crew, that make a movie what it is, and everyone's contribution should be recognized, not just mine.
To wrap this up, the most important question is, when and where can people see Cocaine Shark?
Cocaine Shark will be available on physical DVD in early July. And right now, I believe it's streaming on many streaming platforms. So you could, you know, go to any streaming platform you have and look it up, and it might or might not be there. But for the most part, it should be.
Yeah, you'll probably be able to find it, because it's not like it's a obscure name.
No, yeah, and it might even be like a lot of these streaming sites have new or highlight. They throw in the oddball new stuff that might have come out. So chances are it's out there somewhere. I don't usually, and I know it sounds bad, but I don't, once I deliver a movie and it comes out, I really don't follow it. I'm always involved with three or four different projects, so they all overlap. People have to tell me my own movie's out.
Well, Mark, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me on.
It made for a very interesting morning to wake up and watch that. I appreciate it. I appreciate the work you put into it. Regardless of what people might say about the movie, it's a movie. It's not like you put something out there that was just, you know, a static shot of a wall and a person for 80 or 90 minutes and completely boring. It was entertaining.
Well, there you go. Then we won.
Right? You did your job as a filmmaker. You entertained an audience.
That's awesome. I'm glad you liked it.